friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. African football kicks off the September 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The quest for Cameroon 2019 resumed over the weekend with a busy schedule of qualifying matches for the Africa Cup of Nations tournament. And ready to go group by group with all the results is reporter Prince Nesta. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. We kickstart off our comprehensive coverage of the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifier matches in Group A with some sad news. At least one person was killed and nearly 40 injured in a stampede that occurred just before the start of the match between Senegal and Madagascar, which ended in a 2-2 draw. Fans had been queuing up since the early hours of the morning, and there was a rush to enter the stadium as soon as the gates were opened leading to the incident. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, Madagascar. Earlier on, Equatorial Guinea used their homegrown advantage to beat Sudan 1-0 at the Stadio de Bata in Equatorial Guinea. In Group B, host Morocco eased past the flames of Malawi 3-0 in Casablanca, while next year's Nations Cup hosts Cameroon were held to a 1-1 draw away to Comoros. In Group C, Stoke City forward Saido Berahino marked his international debut for Burundi with the opening goal in their 1-1 draw away in Gabon, while Arsenal hitman Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang equalized for the Panthers with just 15 minutes to go. Mali crushed South Sudan 3-0 to top the pool with 6 points. In Group D, the Desert Foxes of Algeria earned a valuable away point after being held to a 1-1 draw by the Scorpions of Gambia in a match that was played at the Independence Stadium in Bakau, Gambia. Togo were held to a 0-0 draw by Benin in Lome in the other Group D fixture. Goals from Ahmed Musa, Chidozie Awuzie, and Odion Ighalo carried Nigeria to a comfortable 3-0 away victory over Seychelles in Group E as the Super Eagles boosted their prospects of reaching the 2019 African Cup of Nations. The win took them to within a point of group leaders Libya and the Bafana Bafana of South Africa, who drew 0-0 in Durban.
Prince, I can sense some feelings of excitement from you as we go to the Group F results. Am I wrong?
That's right, Sonny. I'm sure Kwame Asante Ofori won't like this news at all. Well, 10-man Harambee Stars of Kenya broke a 15-year jinx against the Black Stars of Ghana as they edged them 1-0 in a match played at the Kasarani Stadium in Nairobi. Victory for Kenya, only the second against the four-time African champions after 15 years, takes them level on points with Ghana after two rounds of qualifiers, with both sides on 3 points. In the other group fixture, Jetane Kebede scored the lone goal as Ethiopia made use of their home advantage to defeat Sierra Leone in Nawassa. Zimbabwe withstood waves of second-half pressure to force a 1-1 draw away to Group G rivals Congo, while Liberia faltered and drew 1-1 at home to Democratic Republic of Congo. In Group H, the Elephants of Ivory Coast overcame the Wasps of Rwanda to beat them 2-1 in Kigali. While in Group I, Mauritania, yet to make it to a World Cup or an African Cup of Nations, is on course for a history after 2-0 win over Burkina Faso, which was the African Cup runner-up in 2013. Angola humbled Botswana 1-0 in Luanda and now sits third in the group.
Prince, one more result from Group H. Guinea defeated visiting Central African Republic 1-0 on a 65th-minute goal by Seduba Suma. If we turn to African Nations Cup qualifying Group J, Prince, is it safe to say mixed fortunes for Mo Salah, even though Egypt posted a big victory?
Right on point, Sonny. Yes, he delivered a memorable attacking display, missing two penalties, scoring twice and contributing two assists as Egypt demolished Niger 6-0 in Group J. The win takes the Pharaohs up to second in Group J, trailing the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, who made it two wins from two African Cup of Nations qualifier by defeating the King Shield of Swaziland. Justin Shonga struck a 90th-minute equalizer and rescued a point for 2012 champion Zambia, denying Namibia an unexpected home win in Saturday's African Cup of Nations qualifier. Benson Shilongo had given the hosts the lead in the 79th minute. The draw at the Sam Nujoma Stadium leaves Zambia and Namibia third and fourth respectively in Group K, with the duo both on 1 point. Guinea-Bissau and Mozambique, who played out a 2-2 draw on Saturday, currently occupy the qualification spots on 4 points each. In Group L, the Uganda Cranes failed to capitalize on a home advantage and were held to a 0-0 draw against their East African neighbors Taifa Stars of Tanzania in a match that was played at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Kampala. In the other group fixture, 10 men, Cape Verde Islands, under point as they played to a 1-1 draw against Lesotho.
Wow, Prince! So many 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying fixtures over the weekend. Prince, what does the upcoming schedule look like in the quest for Cameroon 2019?
Yes, indeed. It was a busy weekend in African football filled with mixed results. And the 2019 AFCON drama continues again on October 9th. And as always, you can count on us to keep you updated on all those fixtures and results right here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Prince Nesta. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Prince. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As Prince Nesta mentioned, the Lone Star of Liberia drew 1-1 at home with the Democratic Republic of Congo. With more details on that Nations Cup qualifier, we're joined by reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Lone Star captain William Jabor struck from 18 yards in the 65th minute to score Liberia's only goal.
We tried to play them happy as possible, but as times go by, we lost a little concentration because the stamina dropped a little bit, but we need to work on it more and to improve the team. And like we're building our team, so by the grace of God, I think next game will be better, you know, game after game. So I think Liberia have a chance. We can qualify. We just need to focus and go to the next game with a positive atmosphere, with the same mentality of winning, and we're going to win.
DR Congo, who were missing five of their key players, had England-based forward Benik Afobi from Stoke City leading their attack.
Yeah, obviously we came here, we wanted the 3 points, but Liberia were much better than we expected. Very solid, they had a good game plan. But, you know, we think at the end of the day, the referees cost us. You know, I think I've gone through on goal. It should have been a red card and we should have had a penalty. So we're a bit disappointed to not get two crucial decisions. But we'll go again and we'll play again in October against Zimbabwe.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. It was also a busy weekend in athletics, featuring high-class performances on the road and in track and field. The America's team won the Continental Cup for the second time, while two outstanding road runners, Mo Farah of Britain and Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot, achieved wins which showed them right on course for marathon challenges this autumn. The energetic Andy Edwards reviews the action from London.
Both Mo Farah and Vivian Cheruiyot were in action in the Great North Run. The 38th edition of this half marathon, held in Newcastle in the northeast of England, is known for attracting top-class performers for a course which is not that easy. Farah carried off the title for a record fifth time, going within 4 seconds of his own British record for the half marathon with 59 minutes 26, while Cheruiyot also finished top of the medal podium, winning in 67 minutes 43, a personal best by 1 second. It should be said at this point that the course is not ratified for official records by the IAAF, the world governing body, since the drop from start to finish exceeds the permitted limit. However, Farah's aim to excel in the Chicago Marathon in early October and Chariot's in New York City a month later have received clear boosts with these performances. Realistically, it would have been a surprise if Mo Farah had been beaten. True, he had a few quality opponents. Daniel Wanjiru, the Kenyan who won the London Marathon last year, plus the New Zealander Jake Robertson, fifth in the Commonwealth Games 10,000 metres this year, and Farah's own training partner, Bashir Abdi of Belgium. As Farah's build-up for Chicago continues, it's clear more than ever that he's confident as an accomplished roadrunner these days after such an outstanding career on the track, which brought him 4 Olympic gold medals and 6 world titles. He said as much after finishing 3rd in London this April with a national record of 2:06.21 and showed he was willing to match the eventual winner, the Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge.
I think in myself there was a lot of questions about me leading up to 2014 where you've gone through and I'm going to change my training, change a little bit my training and still do the 10K and do the marathon. And it didn't go so well. So when I didn't run as well as I wanted and what I was capable of, thinking what I was capable, it didn't go well. You do question yourself and then come back again here in 2018, having run, you know, that 2:06, breaking British record, that answers everything. Yeah, I am.
Farah looked as if he was testing various strategies during the race, giving a burst or two which took him clear, and then allowing the New Zealander Robertson, Daniel Wanjiru, and Bashir Abdi to regain contact. Wanjiru was the first to drop off, and then Abdi, leaving Jake Robertson as the nearest challenger, but he finished over 30 seconds behind, with Abdi third. This bodes well for Chicago on October 7, which is renowned as a fast course, though with quite a few sharp corners and contrary wind at times. Mo Farah is definitely in prime shape. And so is Vivian Chariot, apart from a slight hamstring twinge which she says should clear in a couple of weeks. Her next marathon, New York City, is on November 4 and follows her personal best to win London this April in 2 hours 18 minutes 31 seconds. The Kenyan gave herself an early birthday present. She turns 35 on Tuesday by winning the Great North Run title for the second time, breaking her best by 1 second and looking in control of a field among which her chief rivals were 4 fellow Kenyans, Jocelyn Jepkosgei, Betty Siner, Bridget Kosgei and Lynette Maasai. Kosgei was the last challenger to drop off the pace and only did so as the race headed into the closing stages along the seafront in South Shields. It's only 2 years ago since Vivian Chariot was winning an Olympic title at 5,000 metres on the track. After her London Marathon win this year, she reflected on the learning curve, which will have gained fresh impetus with this win in the Great North Run.
Yes, I had to learn about it because marathon, it's a long distance, and if I do my training, it was like maybe 20 kilometers that I can do, but now you have to do a long workout. Everything has changed a lot, so I was thinking that I have to be patient because if you are patient, everything is going to be smoothly because you cannot come from track and field and just say, I want to compete with Mary, I want to run 2:15. That is impossible. You have to come slowly by slowly. Even the child, when he or she is born, he has to go step by step.
While the road running season has been getting into its stride, track and field was rounding off the 2018 season with the Continental Cup, held in Ostrava in the Czech Republic. The Americas team regained the overall title ahead of Europe, with Asia Pacific beating Africa. However, South Africa's Olympic and world champion Caster Semenya had a busy schedule, finishing second over 400 metres on the first day before stamping her authority on the women's 800. Winning in 1:54.77, more than 2 seconds ahead of the American A.G. Wilson. Kenya's world record holder Beatrice Chepkoech was also in a class of her own to win the steeplechase, and the world champion Elijah Manangoi won the men's 1500. All are now likely to be looking forward to a well-deserved holiday, while the roadrunners take centre stage for the autumn. For the Sunny Side of Sport, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to tennis, Novak Djokovic of Serbia and Naomi Osaka of Japan won the men's and women's singles title over the weekend at the U.S. Open in New York. Joining us with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. This year's Women's Championship match will no doubt be one of the most controversial Grand Slam finals of all time. Naomi Osaka was in full control early on, winning the first set 6-2, but things began to completely unravel for her opponent, Serena Williams, in the middle of the second set. First, the chair umpire handed Serena a code violation because he said she received coaching from the player's box, a charge Serena vehemently denied. Then Serena lost a point after smashing her racket. In response to losing the point, she called the umpire a liar and a thief for stealing a point from her. The umpire considered that verbal abuse and hit her with a game penalty that put Naomi up 5-4. Naomi went on to win the second set 6-4 and made history as Japan's first Grand Slam singles champion. But the conclusion was bittersweet for Naomi. She broke into tears as she stood on the podium and was given the trophy in front of a very angry crowd who were probably still frustrated about the chair umpire's call. But Naomi has since said she wasn't sure if the crowd was booing at her, and that made her feel a little sad. But she spoke to reporters directly after the ceremony and said the reality of the win hadn't sunk in.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really feel that real right now. I think maybe in a few days I'll realize what I've done, but right now it just feels like, I don't know, aside from the fact that there's a lot of press in this room, it feels just like another tournament.
Naomi said during the match she was not aware of what was unfolding between Serena and the umpire. She just tried to stay focused on her game.
The crowd was really noisy, so I really didn't hear, I really didn't hear anything that was going on. And when I turned around, it was 5-3, so I was a little bit confused then. But for me, I felt like I really had to focus during this match because she's such a great champion and I know that she can come back from any point. So I was just trying to focus on myself at that time.
And she explained how she was able to remain composed in pursuit of her first Grand Slam.
I was able to do that because it was my first Grand Slam final. I felt like I shouldn't let myself be overcome by nerves or anything, and I should just really focus on playing tennis because that's what's gotten me to this point. I just thought, like, no matter what happens outside of the court, for me, when I step on the court, it's just about tennis.
Naomi has climbed to the top 10 of the WTA singles rankings for the first time, reaching number 7. Meanwhile, Serena's coach admitted he was making hand signals, saying, quote, "I'm honest, I was coaching." Serena stands firm in her position that she did not receive on-court coaching and called on her coach to clarify what he was doing.
"We don't have signals. We've never discussed signals. I don't even call for on-court coaching, so I'm trying to figure out why he would say that. I don't understand. I mean, maybe he said you can do it, but I was on the far other end, so I'm not sure. I want to clarify myself what he's talking about."
And she also explained why she called the chair umpire a liar.
"He took a point from me, and after he alleged that I was cheating and I wasn't cheating, and then I had a good conversation with him, and I said, listen, you know my character. You know me really well. Like, you know that I don't even call for on-court coach. I don't even do that." And he's like, "You know what? I understand." He's like, I don't know if he said you're right, but he understood. He's like, "Yeah, I get what you're saying." And then when I sat down, I said it again. I was like, "Just to be clear, I can understand what you saw because it may have looked, just because I look at my box, it may have looked like I was getting coaching, but I'm telling you, that's not what I do." And I said, "I'd rather lose than have to cheat to win. I don't need to cheat to win. I've won enough. And that's never been something I've ever done, you know?" So, and he was cool. He was like, "Oh, I get it." And we had this great exchange and we were on the same page and we understood each other.
The U.S. Tennis Association has fined Serena $17,000 for 3 code violations. Serena added to the outcry that made headlines early in the tournament, double standards in tennis.
"For me, it blows my mind, but I'm going to continue to fight for women and to fight for us to have equal, like Courtney should be able to take her shirt off without getting a fine. Like, this is outrageous, you know? And I just feel like the fact that I have to go through this is just an example for the next person that has emotions and that want to express themselves and they want to be a strong woman. And they're going to be allowed to do that because of today. Maybe it didn't work out for me, but it's going to work out for the next person.
Serena's claims of sexism have been backed by the WTA. On Sunday, CEO Steve Simon issued a statement that said, in part, the U.S. Open women's final brought to the forefront the question of whether different standards are applied to men and women. The WTA believes that there should be no difference in the standards of tolerance provided to the emotions expressed by men versus women, and is committed to working with the sport to ensure that all players are treated the same. We do not believe that this was done last night. We also think the issue of coaching needs to be addressed and should be allowed across the sport. The WTA supports coaching through its on-court coaching rule, but further review is needed. Serena has also climbed the WTA rankings, moving up to number 16 as she continues to make her comeback from maternity leave. On the men's side, there was no interference for Novak Djokovic. He defeated Argentine Juan Martín Del Potro in straight sets to win his third U.S. Open title. After the match, he said the road back from an elbow injury taught him patience, but he always believed he would get back to top form.
If you told me in February this year when I got the surgery that I'll win Wimbledon, US Open, and Cincinnati, it would be hard to believe. But at the same time, you know, there was always part of me that imagined and believed and hoped that I can get back on the desired level of tennis very soon. I expected, to be honest, quite frank, after surgery that I'll be back on a high level, very, you know, quite fast, but. You know, it took me actually 3-4 months, really.
Djoko also won this year's Wimbledon tournament. He said he feels like he's playing at a whole new level and said playing the likes of Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal have stepped up his game.
You know, I had to figure out early in my career when I was losing most of the big matches on the Grand Slams against them, you know, what it takes for me to actually, you know, kind of improve and develop my game to be able to challenge them, you know, to be able to start winning against them and when it matters the most. So I think that was the one of the most important so to say moments and periods of my life, of my tennis career, of my development, and I owe it to them.
Djokovic has claimed his 14th career major to tie with American tennis star Pete Sampras. Opponent Juan Martín Del Potro also spoke to reporters after the match and said, although he pushed himself to the limit, Djokovic was tough to beat. Del Potro also considered himself a lucky man to be able to play against Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. That concludes this year's U.S. Open tennis tournament. And Sonny, it's been a roller coaster. I'll hand it back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. We really enjoyed your in-depth coverage of the U.S. Open tennis tournament, the year's final Grand Slam event. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Zimbabwe, where the country's golden girl, Olympic champion swimmer Kirsty Coventry, has been named Zimbabwe's Minister of Youth, Sports, Art, and Recreation. Writing on Twitter earlier Monday, Kirsty said, and I quote, "I'm honored to be appointed, and I will continue to carry our flag with pride and dedication of service so we can come together and take Zimbabwe forward." Kirsty Coventry raised Zimbabwe's flag high at both the 2004 Olympics in Athens and the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. Kirsty won a total of 7 medals in Greece and China, including 2 gold medals. And reporter Columbus Mavunga in Harare will have more on this story during Tuesday's Sunny Side of Sports. And that wraps up the September 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, recently announced additional assistance to support achieving the goals outlined in the Bilateral Development Objectives Assistance Agreement between the U.S. and Nigerian governments, signed in 2015. $25 million will strengthen good governance by supporting state governments' efforts to bolster Nigeria's open government partnership commitments to improve transparency and fight corruption. An additional $1.5 million will support a healthier, more educated population in targeted states through the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, also known as PEPFAR, for a total of $26.5 million in additional assistance. The additional new funding brings the total U.S. government assistance provided under the five-year Development Objectives Agreement to $1.1 billion. USAID is also working with federal and state health ministries to build stronger health systems with the aim of guaranteeing equitable access to quality health care services nationwide. USAID collaborated with Nigeria's Ministries of Budget and National Planning, Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, as well as state-level government counterparts, to structure the Bilateral Assistance Agreement, which runs through 2020. The United States believes that as the most populous country in Africa with the largest economy on the continent, Nigeria holds tremendous influence over the future of Africa, Acting Mission Director Aaron Holleran said. USAID is committed to partnering with the government and the people of Nigeria to address its development challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
I'm Lino Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will take a look at the ongoing Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Our guest is Dr. Malonga Myatudila, senior public health specialist and one of the doctors who first discovered the Ebola virus in the DRC in 1976. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a discussion with Ugandan pop star Bobby Wine on his arrest, detention, and release, and why he came to the U.S. to seek medical attention. Ugandan politics in the spotlight on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.